Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, how Minnesota's midterm candidates are talking about immigration. But first, why the race for Minnesota's attorney general may be one of Election Day's biggest surprises. When Congressman Keith Ellison decided to run for state attorney general, his supporters assumed that his name ID and political experience would make the race a fairly easy one to win. Then allegations of domestic abuse surfaced, which Ellison has denied. Now our new NPR Star Tribune poll reveals that for the first time this season, Ellison's opponent, Doug Wardlaw, is leading. We're turning to Humphrey School political scientist Larry Jacobs for some insight on how voters are seeing the race and the issues. Larry, welcome. Good to talk to you again.
Good to be back.
Hey, I think it is valuable to remember how Ellison got into the race after Lori Swanson decided to run for governor. Talk a little bit about the dominoes that fell to bring us to this point.
Well, I would say for some time there were kind of murmurings that Keith Ellison wanted to leave Congress and possibly run for attorney general, but he held off doing that and actually said he wouldn't because Lori Swanson indicated she was going to run for re-election as attorney general, which cleared the field of both Democrats and the high-quality Republicans. And lo and behold, at the endorsing convention for the Democrats, Lori Swanson pulls out of the attorney general's race and jumps into the primary for the governor's race, which she ended up losing, of course, to Tim Walz. So all of a sudden, Keith Ellison jumps into the attorney general's race along with a number of other DFLers to run in the primary. And he ends up winning primarily because I think he was better known and had a lot of support among the progressive wing of the Democratic Party.
So, Larry, as you note, I mean, Keith Ellison has good name ID. He was in a, I'd say, very safe congressional seat. What do you think the calculation was? Before we talk about why he's having some trouble with that calculation.
I think he was bored in Congress. He had been in the minority for a long time and wasn't much fun, and he was looking for new challenges and thought he'd come back and be attorney general and kind of advance his agenda back in the state of Minnesota.
Do you think there was also an idea of, I can do this job for a while and then maybe I'm well-positioned for a run for governor at some point?
I think Keith Ellison is, you know, a very powerful, progressive politician in the country. He helped to found the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives in Washington. Yeah, I think he had plenty of ambition, and he'd been quite successful. So he thought, yeah, let's take on the attorney general's spot and try to drive his agenda through that location.
So when you see this NPR Star Tribune poll having Ellison 7 points behind Wardlaw, is it all about the doubts around these domestic violence allegations against Keith Ellison? What else might be contributing to this flip in the poll?
I think that's a big part of it. I mean, when you look at all the polls we've been seeing over the last month, the Democrats hold, you know, in general, an edge. It's not a large one, but it's been, you know, 6-7 points, with the exception of Amy Klobuchar, who's in a league of her own with plus 20-point lead. And my point here is that statewide, Democrats tend to do well because they build up these huge majorities in the Twin Cities. And Keith Ellison's race is the, you know, I would say, shocking exception to that pattern.
Well, you've just mentioned something that's important to understand here. While he may not be well known outside of his district or outside of the Twin Cities, right? I mean, his name ID may not be very strong in greater Minnesota, but usually the way DFL candidates overcome that is by running up big totals in the Twin Cities.
Right. And we're seeing, you know, for instance, that's the strategy Tina Smith is using, Tim Walz is using that strategy, and some of the other statewide DFL candidates. Republicans have been better, you know, at winning in the exurbs and the rural areas, and helps account for their majorities in the Minnesota legislature. But I think the problem for Keith Ellison and why he's, you know, the exception to this pattern of DFL leads is the allegations against him and, frankly, his inability as a candidate to get out in front of the campaign and define the issues instead of being stuck on the defensive. He's been unable to really penetrate his message or to raise questions about his opponent, Doug Wardlow. Instead, most of the focus has been on Keith Ellison for months now.
So I want to understand what you're saying. You're saying his inability to get out in front of his campaign on the issues, meaning not just on the denials, on the domestic abuse allegations, but other issues?
Yeah, I mean, he actually has a campaign. His campaign website has got a whole lot of issues he's laid out. He's going to be an aggressive, progressive attorney general. And, you know, he goes out and he'll kind of talk to voters or hold events. And there's little coverage of what he's actually talking about. Instead, he's pinned down responding to basically the same set of questions about the allegations of physical and emotional abuse. And then there was a kerfuffle over his divorce proceedings,
right,
which were released and actually showed him to be, I think, in many people's eye, a good guy in that case. But, you know, still, the storyline is there's a cloud over Keith Ellison, and this race has become a referendum on Keith Ellison. And I think we're seeing voters, at least in this poll, saying they're voting against Keith Ellison, even though they may not know much about his Republican opponent.
That's notable, too. Larry Jacobs is with us, if you've just tuned in, from the University of Minnesota Humphrey School, where he's a political scientist and director of the Center for Politics and Governance. And we're talking to him about one of the surprising results that came out of the NPR Star Tribune poll, and that's where the attorney general's race is right now. Our poll is showing that for the first time this season, Keith Ellison's opponent, Doug Wardlow, is leading Keith Ellison in the race for attorney general. Larry, I wonder, as a political scientist and as a longtime observer, how you characterize the way Keith Ellison handled these denials, these questions about this allegation from a former girlfriend, and then what he said about it and the way he behaved about it.
You know, I think these stories are always hard. So I don't think there's like a magic solution. And there's clearly been a feeding frenzy that's developed around the issue. I think initially there was too much denial rather than coming forward.
Yeah, meaning what?
Well, you know, there was a lot of the this didn't happen. And then as the issue persisted, they then went ahead and got an investigation. But I don't think many independent people thought it was very credible, mm-hmm, because it was being done by a law firm with close connections to Keith Ellison's party, the DFL. So that didn't have a lot of credibility. So I think, you know, it's been one kind of cycle of kind of bad news for Keith Ellison, whereas if they come out from the very beginning, done an investigation by a credible law firm and had it done in, let's say, the spring, mm-hmm, that news cycle might be over.
Yeah.
And he could be saying today, that's old news, we've already looked into it. Instead, it remains on people at the front of their minds, and I think we're seeing some of the consequences in the NPR poll.
One of the other things that doesn't appear to be happening among, I guess, a majority of voters is giving Keith Ellison the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you do see people in the polls saying undecided. I think, you know, it's a high number, 16% undecided. But for people who are swinging away, as you've noted, from Keith Ellison, they are voters who are not willing, apparently, to say, well, I don't have absolute proof of this, but I'm not really willing to give Ellison the benefit of the doubt. Why do you think that is? And I wonder if you think some of it is not just the way he's reacted to it, but his persona as a politician.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're, you know, running for a statewide office with a progressive agenda is something we've seen in Minnesota. But for the attorney general's office, it might be a bigger lift. And the fact that Keith Ellison is still the number two official at the Democratic National Party may strike some voters, including DFLers, as too political. And that's not to say that every attorney general for decades now has had an agenda. They do. But it may be too sharp of an agenda. The challenge for Keith Ellison, I think, is how does he pivot from being on the defensive to beginning to bring the debate to Doug Wardlow? There are some very strong contrasts, and that hasn't happened yet. Doug Wardlow has a record and questions about him, and those have not really received much attention, or at least as much attention.
Well, you know, Larry, he would have to agree to do some debates, and he has said no to Minnesota Public Radio, and we're going back to him with another offer to do a debate. But what you're describing is the kind of thing that happens in a debate, isn't it?
Exactly. No, I think we're also going to see, I would expect, some significant advertising being done by supporters of Keith Ellison. I look at this poll and the number that pops out to me, and the one that I'm sure political consultants who work for the DFL are also looking at, is Mr. Wardlow has only an 8% unfavorable rating, and 56% say they don't recognize his name. And for a political professional, they look at that and say, we've got to get to that 56% and define Mr. Wardlow. And you do that by bringing up, not in the kind of trashy way, but bringing up his record when he was an attorney working for a pretty conservative Christian organization called the Alliance Defending Freedom.
Let me grab a call here for you, Larry, from Mark in Golden Valley. Hi, Mark. What are you curious about?
One thing I don't see or hear talked about at all in the Ellison candidacy for attorney general is the fact that he is a Muslim. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a supporter of Keith Ellison's, but I have a lot of relatives in outstate Minnesota, and they wouldn't publicly say it, but the vast majority of them will not vote for him simply because he's a Muslim. And okay. I think that's an aspect of his candidacy that is missed. I don't think the sexual misconduct allegations are that big a deal. I think it's that he's of a different religion than what most Minnesotans are comfortable with.
Let's see what Larry has to say about that.
Mark, thank you for saying that. I think that could well be, you know, a subtext here. You know, I thought Keith Ellison, when he was quite clever when he got sworn in Congress, he used the Quran that Thomas Jefferson had in his library. And I think the point was that America is a country of many religions, and one of our blessings is that we respect that. And, you know, this was a barrier that John Kennedy had to cross because he was Catholic. And, you know, I think we are at a point of transition where our idea of identity and religion is being, challenged. And Keith Ellison may be part of that.
Larry, the other thing we haven't mentioned is we're also in a cultural moment where women are speaking out and talking about their experiences of sexual harassment and sexual assault. And you talk to some voters or you watch social media on this, and women say, I believe her, even though she said she had evidence and we haven't seen it, I'm inclined to believe her. So maybe the politics in a larger sense, right, of this Me Too movement are having an effect on this.
Oh, I think the effect is huge. Frankly, you know, I think the Me Too movement has been the big force of 2018, though I think I also hear from my friends in the DFL party that they feel that the Me Too movement has had kind of an unequal effect. It doesn't seem to have derailed President Trump or Judge Kavanaugh, but it did lead to the resignation of Al Franken and may be a factor in why Democrats are not yet supporting Keith Ellison.
Do you have a sense, Larry, that Keith Ellison at this point thinks that it would do more damage to be on a debate stage with Doug Wardlow than not?
In my view, Keith Ellison at this point has nothing to lose. There's a good chance he's going to lose this race the way it's currently set up, because there are so many questions about Keith Ellison. He's become the point of referendum mm-hmm. on this race, and there are a lot of anti-Ellison race voters out there. Instead, I think he needs to get out there and begin to define Doug Wardlow. There's a lot there that Democrats and independents don't know about him. It may help that 56%. This is a poll of registered voters. There are going to be another set of voters who actually turn out, the likely voters. Mm-hmm. And those folks, particularly in the Twin Cities, might be inclined to support Keith Ellison at a higher rate than they are right now if they saw his campaign and his agenda.
Well, time is short, though, right? We have 2 weeks.
That is the
today.
Problem. Yeah. And, you know, that's why I say at this point the advantage is in Mr. Wardlow's court, because the clock is ticking, and that is a very powerful threat to Keith Ellison. He's going to run out of time.
Larry, I always appreciate the insight. Thanks much.
Yep, good to be with you.
Larry Jacobs with us, a professor at the Humphrey School and director of the Center for Politics and Governance at the University of Minnesota.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.